Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for Forecast is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
What sort of future do you think we're heading for? How will we live as we slip into the 21st century?
Welcome to Forecast, episode 51. I'm Tom Merritt.
And I'm Scott Johnson.
And this is the episode where we attempt to fit in time to predict the future. We had a little technical difficulty getting started today. We have some great guests, and we have to finish in time so that we can take advantage of having them here. So let's get right to it. Welcome Annalee Newitz, editor-in-chief of io9.com. Annalee, it's great to have you on the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for being on. Also joining us, Dan Patterson, digital platform manager at abcnewsradio.com. Hey, Dan, how's it going?
It's wonderful to join you today.
Of course, as you may notice, if you're watching the video version, Dan is not available in video. That's part of, not the whole of, the technical issues we have getting going. Well, let's start off with a prediction from a listener. Not Leo writes in. Says, a recurring theme in Forecast is the idea of downloading our consciousness into a computer or a new body. You read an email recently that surmised this process would be limited to the rich or politicians. This got me thinking about the 22nd Amendment to the United States Constitution, which limits presidents to 2 terms of office. If this technology was available today and former President Clinton decided to have it done, would he be allowed to run for president again? Would it matter if his new body was a clone made from his own DNA or a generic body that contained no Bill Clinton DNA?
Wow. First of all, I think not Leo might be Leo. Second of all,
you predict.
That's a pretty crazy idea. And we hadn't really considered that because we do talk about this. Like, presidents and heads of state would be the first in line to get this technology. But in the end, maybe, you know, we'd still have to have stuff in place and we'd just test your DNA. Oh, you're Bill Clinton. Sorry, you can't run on the ticket this year. I don't think it'd be that hard to police that.
Dan, Annalee, do you have any thoughts on this? You know, the idea of bottled politicians running for office?
I think it sounds like a great way to get a legal loophole going, because if you say you want this president to get elected again, well, you clone them, but you make a few changes in their DNA, a couple nucleotides difference, and then you can argue in court, well, it's not really Bill Clinton. It's actually mostly Bill Clinton. But then you'd have people arguing over what percentage of Bill Clinton you'd have to be in order to be disqualified to become president. So I predict a lot of court battles.
Dan?
I don't know. Yeah. I don't know what percentage of Bill Clinton we may or may not want to see run again. And that just opens it up.
That's a whole different question, right?
But of course, that's I don't know if you discussed the wonderful graphic novel series Transmetropolitan on the show or not. But if you haven't, there's very similar things that are discussed. And of course, we have to then define what is human? What is our essence? Because if something is genetically identical, even if we alter it, that's the act of altering it doesn't make it not what it once was. But then we get circular conversations. I think it's fantastic. And, you know, I know a lot of people who'd like to see that 22nd repealed and Mr. Bill run again. So, yeah, sure.
Yeah, I mean, although we have a hard enough time keeping the Bushes straight now, since they're both named George, if we have, like, clones of both of them running, it just gets even more confusing.
I'm just saying that you can ensure that he will not be electable if you can make sure it's burger-eating, blue-dress Clinton. If it's that guy, no one will elect that guy again. But if it's, you know, smart, very, you know, well-spoken Clinton, he might have a chance. So you just got to limit it to say, all right, you're going to be the Big Mac-eating, blue-dress controversy person, and you're not in. You can't run again.
That's why only 75% of Bill Clinton can be reelected, right? We have to pick out that percentage of his genome to fabricate.
That'll be the 51st Amendment, allowing setting the percentage of someone who can be reelected.
Absolutely.
All right, let's start with the short-term predictions. These are things you think will happen sooner than later on the near horizon. Annalee, we'll start with you. What is your short-term prediction for Forecast today?
My short-term prediction is that we will be able to do street drug deals with cell phones, and specifically with Android apps, because I don't think iPhone would allow you to, you know, download a street drug deal app. So I think what you would do is you'd have people putting up these augmented reality tags that you see everywhere. And you'd walk down the street with your drug deal app and you'd look to see who's selling what. And then you'd use some kind of M-Pesa type system to credit the drug dealer's cell phone with however much money you wanted and get your drugs. So it's all clean and, you know, there it is right there, your drug deal on the street brought to you by an Android app.
So no more corner kids, right?
No more having to like guess, you know, who's selling what, you know, right. They'll just have the tag right there. So you won't mistakenly approach a heroin dealer because you want pot, you know, just get rid of all the confusion. And, you know, that's how technology makes things better.
This one actually lands in that category, Tom, that we have occasionally of predictions that I think have some actual merit. No Tom intended. But the idea that you could do that is not far-fetched to me at all. Like, it's just a matter of the dealers and the buyers getting their heads around using this technology in such a way that they could just GPS the crap out of their business and create tags and do RFID in the future and end up with a whole new way. It's kind of like this. It's like the uptick in porn purchases or the uptick in even pizza orders. It's so easy to just do it online. It eliminated all that pain in the butt of having to go pick something up and, you know, wear a mustache and hide. This is not that dissimilar to me. It seems like this could happen next week.
This is already happening. I live in New York City, and there are some jokes to be made about this, especially making money on the float. Drug dealers can easily have an app and just allow the drugs to be a loss leader and do something like Venmo or PayPal, where your money is sitting in limbo, making interest on that transaction fee. But drug dealers now are doing that here in the city. I mean, geolocation, while you never want to be tied to an identity or that identity tied to a particular location, this is a story that is flying under the radar. I don't want to say we're officially working on this at ABC, but I definitely know some of my colleagues have been looking at this in terms of particular neighborhoods and then going prices for particular drugs in different neighborhoods and then being able to do transactions from using apps like Venmo direct to a vendor. Speaking euphemistically, but from a client to a vendor, pretty seamlessly. I mean, this is happening.
Yeah, really. What we need, I mean, it isn't so much the augmented reality app where you kind of walk down the street and figure out who's a drug dealer. What we need is just cash. How do you create something that is basically
without
cash that you can exchange between cell phones or between mobile devices? And so that's really the final piece. And I think that you're right. I mean, that already exists. So.
Yeah, in a lot of countries, they're using prepaid minutes as a banking system.
Right, that's why I mentioned the M-Pesa system. The M-Pesa system is the one that they're using. It started in Kenya. It's now being used in Afghanistan. It's bankless transactions.
Yeah, so we're not that far away. So that is maybe a shorter-term prediction than some people might think.
Next couple of years.
Yeah, it's all about trackability, encryption, deniability. Doesn't even have to be like high-level encryption. It could just be, you know, no identity on that phone and no, you know, the GPS turned off.
That's right.
But where they always get you is that deposit into a bank account of some type or another, which is why drug dealers use cash. But that's always the catch with schemes like this, is that we can do everything. We can encrypt the hell out of everything. But the prepaid minutes, I'd never thought of that.
Yeah.
That's some replacement for currency.
Let's kick it over to you, Dan, then. What you got on your short-term prediction plate, if short-term predictions were a plate?
I'd be a terrible political pundit if I didn't make a prediction about this upcoming election. I know this isn't strictly tech, but we do have an election here in the States in about 3 weeks, and this is also the earliest or one of the earliest elections in U.S. history on November 2nd, and it is the second United States election to happen with World Series games happening that could potentially occur. We could have three games after the election, and an old political saying is America doesn't care about politics until after the World Series. So my prediction is also a question, and that is less about the status of will the Republicans regain the House or Senate, and more what will happen if the World Series is still played up to and potentially on Election Day. And we're already seeing a very dissatisfied electorate and likely voters, potential voters, those numbers are incredibly low right now. So my prediction is that the World Series will be far more important to the American electorate than this upcoming election.
Even if it's Phillies Rangers?
The Rangers, they're going to lose. The Yankees are going to beat the Rangers. Five games, six games.
Oh, so now we're getting into baseball predictions. I see.
We can make that prediction, too. I'm a Yankee fan.
All right, but this is interesting, right? I've heard this old slogan, like, no one cares about politics until after the World Series, and it dates back to a time when the World Series happened in mid-October, and it's been getting pushed later and later and later till now it's in the first week of November, and it is odd to have the World Series happening on Election Day.
Well, and particularly if you look at Nate Silver, who does 538.com, this is the real big tech hook. 538 was recently purchased by the New York Times, but Nate does amazing data analysis. And those are the conclusions that he's drawing, is that the World Series will have a far greater impact on the elections, which, of course, influences policy, and that influences technology like nothing else. In fact, this coming election could have a larger impact on the technology world, particularly with how rights holders and the split with the public is treated. So this could be a very important election for those who are into technology and politics, and you might have to care about baseball. It's 538.com, a really great source for data analysis.
I like that and the Iowa prediction market as ways to kind
Iowa
of tell.
Iowa prediction market. They're almost never wrong.
Yeah, they've rarely been wrong. It's only in cases where they didn't get enough of a critical mass of people placing bets. Annalee, do you think World Series more important than the election this year?
Well, I think the question is always, if an event like this is going to prevent a chunk of people from voting, what chunk of people is it going to prevent? And so yep. If it's going to influence the outcome of the election, it's going to be because a certain percentage of people are only tuned into the game. They're either going to the game or they're watching it on TV or watching it online. So does this mean that we're going to have more Republicans elected or fewer Republicans elected? How will it affect incumbents? That's what I want to know. I mean, it could be that this will mean that more people who are interested in technology issues will be voting, because the stereotype, of course, is that people who are interested in technology are less interested in sports. So we'll have to see.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see. I've heard people theorize before if there was a like a Halo Reach launch the weekend of an election, or a major movie launch the weekend of election, how much does something like that in the entertainment business or the video game business or something like that, how much does that create a big stir? If there was a brand new iPhone available the day of the election and there were huge lines at every Apple store, does that make a dent? Does that automatically increase or decrease the number of, say, Democrats that show up because everyone thinks Apple fans are Democrats? Or, you know, I love that kind of data. So this is about as close as we're going to get to seeing what a huge sort of cultural event would do to an otherwise normal election period, which is, I don't know.
Yeah, and I think now what we need to do is convince J.J. Abrams to release the next Star Trek movie during an election period so we can see how that balances things out.
I agree.
In the name of science.
In the name of science, JJ, do it for us.
All right, on to the long-term prediction. We'll stick with you, Dan. These are longer views, more of the in 100 years or longer sort of situation predictions. What do you think is going to happen long-term?
Well, with everything, it'll be just fine. not to be overly serious here, but sticking on the themes of journalism and the future of journalism, you know, we pontificate a lot about what will happen with media and journalism. And we talk a lot about print and the future of newspapers and representing broadcasting. It's really interesting. I'm not here to be an apologist for or advocate of broadcast or radio, but you know, we have 74 million weekly listeners to our talk radio product, and there's an aggregate of about 150 million Americans who consume a radio or broadcast type product on a weekly basis. That's a lot of people. 150 million is a lot of people. And I was in Darfur about 18 months ago, and you know, the technology that is there are two technologies that are most heavily relied upon to disseminate a message. One, obviously, is radio and broadcasting. You can throw a tower up, it can get bombed, and you can throw another tower up. And there are not the bureaucratic restrictions when broadcasting across the border from, say, Chad or Kenya. But SMS has risen dramatically, particularly in the elections in Kenya 2 years ago. SMS was next to radio as the number one way that people received their information. And it's really interesting to see, although I think everybody is kind of hyperventilating within the industry about how they're going to survive and what technologies like Pandora may or may not do. But I think as radio evolves or devolves, we start to see some really interesting correlations between more sophisticated technologies like SMS and cellular technology. And we see that they have a relative expense cost and ease of consumption and similar engagement numbers. And I think it'll be really, really interesting to see as costs deflate how broadcast and wide broadcast technologies persist. And again, I'm not here to be an apologist for a particular medium or not, but the one medium that has survived technological changes, and there's been nothing that is the death of radio, nothing has been forecast more often than the death of radio. And my prediction, I think, is that we will see cheap technologies like this persist, business models aside.
I think you're right.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think what you said is true. It's just an issue of, it's like newspapers. Can newspapers or other print sources still survive in a future of so much digital distribution? The answer is yes. It just may not be with the old numbers they used to have. And you're right about radio. I mean, TV was supposed to spell the end of radio, and it didn't do it. And radio is a passion of podcasters. We all look at it as the ultimate cool thing in the world, and the fact that the internet allows us to basically be our own radio stations is nothing more than a great big fat nod to the radio of our youth. And I don't see that medium going away. I just think it's more spread out, and as it gets cheaper, like you say, there'll be more, perhaps the model breaks, but there'll be more people able to do the broader range broadcasting than there are now. So it's just more to share in the same numbers.
And Scott, yeah, you said the exact right word there with models, and that's important. It's really important to separate out the future of a business model, the ability to monetize a particular medium versus the medium itself. And, you know, we all know dozens, hundreds, thousands of podcasters willing to do it for free or for cheap, and they're happy just making content. You know, will the medium survive versus will the business model survive are two totally different questions, and I think we rarely ask that. I'm sorry, I didn't
so
mean
do
to
you,
speak
do you
over
think yet. That the I'm curious, do you think that the business model will survive? Because I like your idea of a kind of a future where people who may not have access to a lot of resources still have access to radio, and maybe we see a flowering of pirate radio in a way we haven't before. But what happens to the radio industry?
Well, the radio industry will have to change like all industries change. And that's far less interesting and less exciting than exactly what you just said, you know, small radio, or let's replace the word pirate with LPFM, low power, right? And we all know the importance of community and what we do. I mean, we're all in geographically dissimilar locations, but we're all able to create or at least gather around and create community. And an important component of radio is community, especially in local radio and local public radio. A business model that's doing pretty well is the public radio model. And listener-supported, community-supported radio, a for-profit model, I mean, it'll survive, it'll change. And with the flattening and more segregated media environment, yeah, it'll change, and it'll probably become smaller and smaller over time. And what we consider radio, you know, delivery over LTE and 4G may become radio at some point in maybe not 100 years, but in 20 years, that could certainly be viable. But radio as broadcast, I think, will be just fine. And I think community will support the things that continue to draw community together. And to that end, inexpensive, low-power, community-driven radio, I think, has a very bright future.
All right, let's switch it over to you, Anna Lee. When you look 100 years or more in the future, what is your flying car sort of prediction?
Well, I wanted to make a prediction, which is about the future of disease. And one of the things that I'm really fascinated with is the way that viruses are being engineered to produce metals. This is part of material science research, and there's some going on at MIT and Caltech. And so people have synthesized viruses to do things like produce solar cells or to produce computer monitors and, you know, by tweaking the genome and getting them to kind of produce virus shells that are made of metals instead of the usual virus shell. So basically, imagine a future where we have a lot of technologies that have been generated by these tweaked viruses that produce metals or that produce solar cells. So my prediction is that we're going to see things like lung tumors that are solar cells, and that basically you'll see people who've accidentally inhaled some of these viruses, or some of the viruses have not been perfectly engineered to stop their growth the way they should. And so they get into the environment. And so you see people growing pieces of metal in their bodies, or you see people ingesting these viruses and them. And for example, you'd see a colony of, you know, copper growing in someone's bowel, for example, because they've accidentally eaten some of this virus.
What happened to Uncle Bob? Ah, PVC pipe through the heart.
Ah. Yeah, exactly. And there's a fantastic designer in the UK, Daisy Ginsberg, who's done a lot of representations of these kinds of futuristic diseases. She's worked with synthetic biologists and talked to them about these possibilities of how these biotech devices might turn into tumors. And she actually has a great image of a golden colon, which is more of a joke than an actual prediction. But it is kind of exciting. And so this is what I'm most interested in right now, is sort of how will these weird biotech inventions come back to bite us in the ass?
Wow. I hadn't even thought about that. I mean, the idea that they could take, there's technology to say, all right, well, here's a virus that we will have help build us these products, because there's no other way for us to generate titanium anymore, because we've soaked it all up or whatever. That seems like a really neat idea, but I hadn't really considered the idea that virus could mutate, get sneezed on me, and suddenly I'm made of titanium. I don't know.
Have a little colony. I love the idea of someone growing like a little mini solar cell in their lung, which of course, because we'll have advanced medicine, it'll be able to be removed and hopefully
or power their lung. Heart, like Tony Stark.
That would have to be on the outside of their body, so they would get like a melanoma on their skin made of a solar cell.
The Stark melanoma.
Nanobots to the rescue, then, right? Is that kind of our answer to sort of fight that stuff?
Well, maybe the answer is good regulation. Maybe the answer is, medicine adapting to assume that we're going to have viruses, that we're not only going to be communicating viruses that are wild type viruses, but engineered viruses, and that they aren't going to just make you sneeze. They're going to make you grow weird industrial products on your body.
Twick in the chat room and Ken, our engineering VP, both said Wolverine. I want to catch the Wolverine virus.
Well, remember that scene in the Wolverine movie where he gets injected with the adamantium and he's all angry and naked? It didn't seem very pleasant. I don't know. I mean, maybe the outcome is worth it in the end, but it really did. It was, you know, even though he was naked, it was not a good scene. I mean, the naked was good, but he seemed so unhappy.
Yeah, have you seen anything about PCPs and almost exactly this within water supplies? I was at a conference in Portland, Maine, a couple years ago about almost exactly this. The things that we flush down the drains, you know, the pills that we don't want, and the impact on wetlands and particularly the fish that live in our here in Brooklyn, I wouldn't call them live, but exist within our runoff.
All those hipster fish in Williamsburg.
Yeah, those trendy little bastards.
Get their little mustaches.
Mustache fish. That's exactly what we're seeing. Mustache fish.
And it's from the pharmaceuticals in the water supply. Exactly. No, it's
you can see like a macro version of this happening with a lot of the seabirds that have been eating eating plastic from these kind of garbage whirlpools that form in the ocean. Mm-hmm. from discarded plastic items. And, you know, scientists have found, you know, hundreds of birds who have starved to death because they've mistaken pieces of plastic for seaweed or for other kinds of food. And so that's basically, they are dying of biotech. You know, they're eating something in their environment that they think of as food, and they're dying because it, of course, doesn't provide them any nourishment to consume plastic.
Sadly, I'm going to have to move us along here because we're running short.
Further into the future.
Yeah, we're running short on time. Ha, get it? So, time for our crazy ass predictions. One really far out there, like in 2,000 years, we're all made of cheese. That's my default example. No one has made that prediction yet. Probably a good idea, but we'll start with you, Annalie. Crazy ass prediction. What do you see?
Okay, here is my idea. Are you ready?
Ready.
Okay, historical reenactment planets. Okay, because here,
I love this.
Here we are in the far future. Okay, pretty much nobody even lives on a planet anymore because it's not. If you want to inhabit the surface area of an object, like a planet is a really bad way to do it. So you probably, most planets have been deconstructed and turned into halo worlds so you can have more surface area for your mass. And, you know, everybody's been bioengineered and they can live in space, so they can live, you know, with three heads. They can, you know, they can do pretty much whatever they want to modify their bodies so that they can live in a variety of environments and they can modify their environments. So, what happens to people who are historical enthusiasts? Basically, the Society for Creative Anachronism of the Future. So for those of you who don't know what the Society for Creative Anachronism is, it's a group of people who get together and reenact medieval life, and they have sword fights, and they have jousting, and they have dancing, and all that kind of stuff. And so in the future, what we're going to have are people who will literally create an entire planet in order to reenact what we're going through right now here in the 21st century. So they'll take a bunch of matter, create an earth, you know, terraform it, add a bunch of toxins to the environment, you know, create a kind of an ozone hole because you want it to be as historically accurate as possible. Otherwise, it's not fun. They'll put themselves back into these weird wild type human bodies where we have to like go to the bathroom and we sweat and we have to like reproduce by having sex, which is like, pretty old school, right? But even though these are pretty miserable conditions for many of us right now, for them it'll be super fun because they can come and they can be vulnerable to disease and aging for a little while, and then they can go back to their atmospheres inside of giant bubbles floating out next to a sun and put back on their, you know, radiation shielding carapace and go back into their regular body. But, you know, once in a while they'll have these big events on their historical reenactment planet and pretend to be 21st century human beings.
So you're not talking about like the Granada invasion planet. You're talking about like planet of the 1990s.
like the Matrix where we're stuck in 1999. I think, you know, the 21st century will be a fun time for people to reenact because a lot of historical reenactment is about war. And so what could be more exciting than being at a time when, you know, we've given up the old Cold War ways of doing things and we're in a phase of terrorism. So, you know, that would probably be super exciting for people who couldn't, you know, die or be injured to like be in a situation where they could put themselves into fake danger and turn all of the things that we think of as being the most horrible aspects of our lives into a fun diversion. So that's what we'll do with us in the future.
I don't want to waste any time because I know we're running short, but I do want to say this is one of my favorite predictions we've ever had. That is an awesome idea. I love that idea. There's something about that just totally clicks with me.
Well, thanks.
Cool. Let's move on over to I'm speechless because I love that prediction so much. I'm already thinking of the different reenactment planets that I want to exist. Our crazy ass prediction for you, Dan Patterson, what do you got?
That's a brilliant prediction. Kind of on the same lines, but far less brilliant. In the post nanobot world, right? Let's say we're able to solve our genetic problems. We're able to solve our disease problems and we have little nanobots that fix things. We get very bored because our life has slightly less meaning because of our mortality. So tourism, disease tourism, I've been reading a lot about empathy genes and the amount of dopamine and serotonin that's required for us to feel good and happy about things versus our ability to empathize with those around us, particularly with a lot of this talk about maybe Mark Zuckerberg is some kind of strange narcissistic sociopath. But in this day and age, we will see more the rise of sociopathy, of people who are unable to relate to those around them. And we will get very, very bored, and we will start doing tourism with I was going to say with diseases and with weird things that we can make our bodies and minds do, but man, that's the terraforming of planets and tourism in, I think maybe we might just have to do interspecies tourism.
Ooh, stepping it up there, Patterson.
Well, you know, become a bird. I was just inspired by the brilliance of that. But, you know, what about having an event where we've decided some of us, just like furries, right? The furries will become real.
Oh, no.
Spatial tourism.
Well, maybe you should add together both the disease tourism and the species tourism so you could become like a diseased panda or something, and it'd be the ultimate experience.
That sounds like a South Park episode.
Planet of the Diseased Pandas.
Pull that idea away. Forget that.
I can't be alone in the fact that I sit around wondering what is going on in my cat's mind like 90% of the day. I always wonder what's going on in my cat's mind. He's looking at me right now. And I want to know what he thinks of what I'm doing. Right. So I'll take that tour. Let's go.
Yeah, me too.
How much fun would it be to play with your dog if you were a dog?
Way fun.
All right, let's finish up with four questions. This is the segment where each of our guests face four rapid-fire questions about the future. Don't stop and think. Just answer with whatever comes to mind. It's free association time.
Yes, indeed it is. And I'm going to ask the first four questions to Dan Patterson. Dan, are you ready?
I'm ready.
All right, here we go. Number one, what was yesterday's date binary code for? It's kind of a trick.
10-10-10, monkey knife fights.
Nope, it was 42. The answer is 42.
Oh, I knew that, too. Well, I still say monkey knife fights.
All right, fair enough. When we do find the Chud civilization, will we befriend them or enslave them?
We'll enslave them.
All right. So you answered that so quickly and naturally.
Well, when given the option to enslave.
Yeah. All right, fair enough. When we no longer have oxygen in our atmosphere, how will we cook our marshmallows?
Also monkey knife fights.
Of course.
And lastly, do you believe a cryonic / frozen person will be brought back to life ever 50 or 100 years?
Last weekend.
All right. I knew with monkey knife fight. Exactly.
At Bernie's.
Congratulations. Nice job. You did good.
All right. Annalie Newitz, are you sitting comfortably?
I'm ready.
Then we'll begin. On a scale of 1 to 33, how Dune-like will our future become?
24.
And why?
Because we are all going to want to have intergalactic travel and take drugs.
Spice. Question number two, singularity, near, middling, or far?
Far.
You sound like a singularity skeptic.
So like Sesame Street, near, far. Anyway.
So no singularity, you're thinking?
Yeah, no.
All right. Question number three, there is a rotating silver disc about 100 meters above your head. You immediately...
wave my arms. Come on, I'm ready for the anal probe.
Right here. Anal probes are us. I like your enthusiasm. And question number four. How many years before Demolition Man passes the 90% true mark?
200.
Okay. That seems about right. I think it's going to go in a bell curve. We're going to hit about 50% really quick, and then it's going to take a long time. Yeah. All right. Well, thank you, guys. I'm sorry we didn't have the full time because of our technical problems, because this was a really fun episode. Really appreciate you guys taking the time to talk with us.
Thanks for having me.
Annalie Newitz, let folks know where they can find you online.
I'm the editor of io9.com, and you can follow me on Twitter. I'm Annalie N.
And Dan Patterson, likewise. Where on the internets are you?
At Dan Patterson is probably the best.
Excellent. Scott, what do we need to do before we finish up?
Well, one thing is to remind people that we also do another show on the Twit Network called Current Geek at currentgeek.com. All the information is there. And then secondly, I didn't get a chance to tell Annalie what a huge fan I am of io9.com and how much I really appreciate her work. So there it is. I said it before the show ended.
Thank you.
All right, folks, don't forget to leave comments at our website, forecastpodcast.com, or send us an email to forecastpodcast@gmail.com. We'll see you next week.
Bye-bye. Music.
I will add it in post.
All right.
Ah,
yay!
Awesome.
That was speedy fast.
I second that. We steal from io9 all the time for the Sword and Laser podcast.
Wow, well, thanks. That's awesome.
I mean, we don't steal. We credit you. We're like, you know, but yeah. We use stuff off there for our news segments all the time.
Oh, well, cool. Awesome. Yay. I love hearing that.
And it's 32 years away.